Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of you. And even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. I love Ruggable because they prove you should never have to choose between a home that looks great and one that's actually livable. Our living room rug was looking a bit dirty lately, so we decided to get a new one from Ruggable. I was instantly drawn to their plush all-in-one rugs because I just love a soft texture, especially when watching TV on the couch. We went with the Finley Smoke Gray Plush Rug. It's really made our space feel so much cozier, and I love that you can just throw it in the wash when needed. It's been so much easier to keep this rug clean because we're often guilty of eating while watching TV, and we need a rug that suits our lifestyle. If you're looking for a high-quality look that's stain-resistant, machine-washable, and has built-in non-slip backing, then Ruggable is for you. Refresh your home with Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code POR at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com and use code POR at checkout.
One thing we talk about a lot on this show is how mental health impacts relationships. And sometimes it's hard to know when you're just stressed or burnt out versus when something deeper is actually going on. This is where Talkiatry comes in. Talkiatry is a 100% online psychiatry practice that connects you with licensed medical providers who specialize in treating conditions like ADHD, anxiety, depression, and more. And unlike therapy-only platforms, this is psychiatry, meaning you're meeting with a medical provider who can prescribe medication when appropriate and provide ongoing medication management. Talkiatry makes the process of finding a psychiatrist way easier. They accept major insurers. Getting started takes just a few minutes online, and many people are able to book appointments within days, not months. Head to talkiatry.com/POR to complete the short assessment and get matched with an in-network psychiatrist in just a few minutes. That's talkiatry.com/POR to get matched in minutes. That's talkiatry.com/POR to get matched in minutes.
I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is the psychology of relationships.
A lot of what shapes our relationships isn't the other person. It's the version of us that shows up in connection. The energy we bring into a first date, the version of ourselves that takes over in moments of closeness, and the patterns that quickly shape how we connect over time. But the big question is, how are you showing up? In this episode, we're joined by Lair Torrent, licensed marriage family therapist and author of The Practice of Love, to explore the many versions of ourselves that emerge in dating and how these same patterns continue into relationships. From the grounded, open version of us to the guarded, anxious, or performative one, we look at how different selves get activated depending on context, chemistry, and past experience. We dive into how mindfulness can help us notice this in real time, why trauma can trigger protected parts of us we don't always recognize, and how these moments shape the way we connect or disconnect from others, and ultimately what it looks like to bring more awareness and presence into how we date and relate. In this conversation, we explore how understanding these internal shifts can change not just who we choose, but how we move through relationships themselves. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships, and if this episode shifted how you think about dating, energy, or relationships, we'd love a rating or review. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy.
Who is showing up for these dates? That is what we're talking about today. All of it really boils down to the many sides of you that encompasses like the multidimensional person that you are. So that's why we have you on our show today, Lair, who we think that you're going to help us bring another layer to dating.
Oh, thank you.
I'm sure you've never heard that one before.
No,
nice
never.
Pun.
No one ever plays with that name.
Welcome, Lair.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, we're super excited to talk to you because we think there's so much of your book and just the conversations you have that apply to people that are in the dating scene, but also that are in relationships. Sure. And I think kind of to double down what Yue was saying before is we see this all the time that there's some people that almost take like too much accountability that they
play the victim, that they're, you know, to blame of why dating isn't going well for them. And then we see others that seem to blame all the external. Mm-hmm. And this could also be people in relationships mm-hmm. too. Why do you think like some people kind of process it different than others?
Well, I guess that's up to the individual. You'll probably see that tracked within their history, either a willingness to take perhaps too much blame or personal responsibility, or maybe not enough, right? And I think that's probably just unique to that individual and how they show up in their lives. You'll see that with their relationship to their relationship to dating, their relationship perhaps to what they do for a living. And I talk a lot about how we show up. And I talk a lot about personal responsibility, either taking on too much or taking on too little, right? And being able to find that fine line of just kind of where you want to live with respect to that kind of thing. So if I'm working with someone, I'll notice like there's an inability to take accountability throughout perhaps. And so, you know, especially in individual counseling where perhaps I'm not putting as much of a shoulder into people as I would normally, I'd let it meander a little bit more and let the process sort of unfold. I'll kind of carefully let them know, like, I think I see this happening for you a lot. Like, we're putting a lot of power in the app's hands when perhaps you are a particularly powerful person. If you started kind of looking at what you're bringing, what you're coming to the table with and your own unique and innate gifts, maybe we can take some of that power back.
And maybe that some of this, our listeners may be thinking that's easier said than done. They might be saying, well, Lair, you're married, mm-hmm. okay? You haven't been on the apps.
Nope.
Let me tell you, the apps are so frustrating.
They are.
I message 1,000 people. Maybe I'll get 2 messages back. And of those 2 messages, I might see 1 person in real life. And then when I see this person in real life, all my eggs are in this one basket mm-hmm. because it feels like a diamond in the rough. How can we actually put into practice what you're saying and show up the way that we're meant to show up as?
Personal work, right? I noticed that for my people, when we interface with the apps and it's particularly frustrating, I'll say, look, let's shut them down for a minute. Let's shut them down and just take a look at what we're coming to the table with. And very often it's energy. And I know this may be getting mm-hmm. out there a little bit for people in the woo-woo, but that's kind of what I do.
We love the woo-woo.
Yeah, so here we go.
Let's bring it on.
Look, your energy counts. How you show up energetically matters. And you are a tuning fork, right? And so like energy attracts like energy. And I personally think computers and apps tend to kind of fall in line with that energetic pulse that you're sort of sending out there in the world. And so the question I ask is, are you coming from a deficit perspective or are you coming from an abundance perspective? Are you turning to yourself and are you finding the innate abundance that lives within you? Like, why are you amazing? Because look, most people are pretty amazing inside. We have to find our gold and show up with your gold and know why you're awesome. And very often when we go away and then come back, we have to play with it a little bit, but very often the apps do respond or they find love somewhere else.
I mean, UA and I agree with that wholeheartedly. We always say that, you know, what we've observed with ourselves, that with people, our listeners, is once they're good with who they are in life, that's when mm-hmm. it usually starts mm-hmm. to get a heck lot easier. I want to turn it to your story, I guess, like from your point of view. Were you always like radiating this energy or was this something that you had to learn?
No, lots of personal work. Okay. I call myself a recovering angry person. Lots of wounding. My mom was 15 when she had me.
Wow.
Very, very impoverished upbringing. This version of the life that I've created thus far, it was not in the narrative early on. So, you know, I had to do a lot of work. I moved to New York City and I wanted to be an actor, not because I loved acting so much as I had this hole in my heart and this ego that needed repair. And I thought becoming rich and famous, of course, would fix everything. Of course. Yeah,
of
sure.
Course.
Do that. And what I also did is simultaneously, I got myself involved with some individual therapy and I became a real convert in that respect. Mm-hmm. I looked at my bookshelf one day and I saw that there were about 70 books on health and mental health and healing, about 4 books on acting. And I decided it was probably time to change course. And so it was the energy that I bring to the table, or at least I try to, comes from my work, digging into myself daily.
How did you meet your partner?
I walked into my bar job. I was a bartender in New York City because, you know, I was an actor. So of course I was a bartender. And so I walked into the manager's office in the basement of the bar that I was working in. And I opened the door and there she was. And I looked at her and I literally said out loud, there you are. And, wow. And she kind of looked at me like, who's this weirdo? I always say she, I'm not sure she had the experience that I had. And so I collected my stuff in my drawer and I tried to get out of there as fast as I could. And I was like, oh my goodness, that was a strange experience. I'm not saying that everybody has that experience, but I did. I had a lot of not great experiences prior to that, fumbling my way through. But, you know, it wasn't perfect when we met by any stretch. We were both working in the food and beverage industry in New York City. Mm. There were quite a lot of tequila-filled, not so awesome evenings, but we both were dedicated to working on ourselves, and we were both dedicated to the program we ultimately went to both become therapists. And so, you know, we healed ourselves and each other along the way.
That's a really interesting point. Sometimes we think like we have to be fully whole to attract that person. Mm-hmm. And what I guess is, I see you shaking your head. What is your take on that? Like, how do you still get to that good place, but not be fully healed in any way?
Well, what are you trying to create, right? Like, is it this we're going to come together and it's this romantic comedy right off scenario? No. No, we are, it was Harville Hendrix that said, you know, and I'm going to butcher the quote, but we are drawn to our romantic partners and we recreate our wounding from childhood, right? But for a very good reason, so that there can be healing. And so people immediately go, codependence. And I go, no, not codependence, an opportunity, right? Like we show each other things, we reflect pieces that need to be healed within each other. Now, most people just battle it out over those things. And that's why I have a job. That's true. It's why I have a job as a therapist, because people don't get beyond that top layer of why are we battling this out here? There's a secondary conversation happening below the surface of the sex, the money, the kids, or whatever it might be, these top of the mind conversations that you see in the top 10 reasons people seek couples therapy or get a divorce, the below the surface conversation, that's the interesting one. And so when I work with people, I'm mildly interested in the story you're telling me about why you came in. Mm-hmm. What I know is there's something underneath that conversation. And for you, it's going to be different from me, then it's going to be different from you than you. It lives in the area of, am I safe? Am I loved? Am I enough? And do I matter? We're trying to answer those four very primordial questions. And if we come to the table with a wounding in one or two or three or four of those areas, and we are trying to heal that with each other. And so I'm trying to say, in my wife's case, you know, thankfully I was looking through a textbook and reading and learning. I realized that the world was an unsafe place for her because of her upbringing. I'm not talking to the adult woman all the time that I see staring back at me. Right. I'm talking to the little girl in her that needs to know that the world's a safe enough place.
Yeah, let's go back to that, because you said something that I've been reading a lot about is this coupling, in addition to the attraction and chemistry, it is joint healing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you find your right partner who is willing to heal with you or who wants to heal with you. I had a friend who said something to me the other day. She was like, oh, I saw you write this thing on your Instagram. It sounds like you're healing. And I was like, oh my God, how does she know that? But how do we know what we're trying to heal? And I think that's kind of the question I've been dealing with is, what specifically of those four questions you asked, how do I even know which one I'm trying to heal here?
Well, a lot of the time, and I don't know this if this happened for either of you two, but when I start naming those questions, you'll feel it, right? So like people cry in my office for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is because I've named their truth, right? And so when you have something that has been with you, whether you're aware of it or not, like I am unsafe in the world, come on, for you. I see it all the time. It'll hit. And sometimes it doesn't, but you'll see people kind of go, oh, I'm not enough. And so, but not, we don't always have the answer immediately, but we have the four questions. And like when I first found those four questions, I sort of pieced it together from a bunch of different research. I tried to look for a fifth and there wasn't one. If anyone has a fifth, please let me know. I'd be happy to entertain it. But you start toying around with them. You start asking yourself as you look across the expanse of your life from birth till now, like, do you see it? If we look from the 60,000 foot view of your life, you know, we stand over any one person's life and we ask those questions, you're going to see it. It's going to come into stark relief. Like in all of those scenarios, I never felt like I was enough. That was mine.
Can you ask those four questions one more time for our listeners?
Sure. Am I safe? Am I loved? Am I enough? Do I matter?
So we have definitely experienced this before, that people come and say, it's the dating apps. I can't get enough matches on the dating apps. Mm-hmm. Then we push them one layer deeper and it's my ex. Then it goes a layer deeper. Mm-hmm. And it's like, actually, that was the first person to view me mm-hmm. as beautiful or right. see me in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. How do we get people to push the boundaries outside of therapy, of course, sure. that's one way. But how do you like go from this superficial external belief that that's your issue with dating to mm-hmm. really digging in taking accountability that this is the challenge?
Well, I mean, I have my way in the way that I try to encourage my clients to work, which is work on it every day. You know, wake up every morning and journal, meditate on it. Look at your life. Look at the different situations in your life and say, okay, I know, you know, my knee-jerk reaction was to perhaps blame, and maybe some blame was certainly deserved on that side. But where did one of those or a few of those questions show up for me? Right. And you can find it in so many different areas. Like I found it in my internship. I came from the background that I told you about. And mm-hmm. I get this coveted internship on Madison Avenue with these awesome and amazing women. And here I am looking for the service entrance. Right. I was constantly feeling as though I wasn't enough when I look at that scenario. For 2 years, I was looking for my pink slip. And my wife was saying to me, mm-hmm. I don't think that's what's going on here at all. But for me, that's what was present there. That's one example. You have yours. Look at the different scenarios in your life and are the different places where you've found contrast or friction and ask the question, did I feel like I was enough? Did I feel safe in the world? Did I feel loved? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You're also quite the champion of mindfulness mm-hmm. as well. So how can people practice mindfulness when it comes to dating, especially keeping some of our listeners in mind who are frustrated by the dating apps, who are frustrated by the mm-hmm. dates that go nowhere? Mm-hmm. Where do they start?
Well, mindfulness is paying attention on purpose. It's not sitting on a cushion for an inordinate amount of time, trying to keep your attention on your breath. That's meditation. Mindfulness is the hoped for peace that we get from sitting on that meditation cushion. And so paying attention on purpose, I say, to how we're showing up to the dating apps. What part of me, what mm-hmm. aspect of my personality, what part of me is showing up there? Because let's say I'm unaware of I know how I feel about the apps, but it kind of pisses me off that I've been having this experience. And so I show up in a part of myself that is defended, that is kind of pushing back, or I show up in my inner critic, right? And the inner critic is the part of self that everyone says, you know, I just wish that part of me would go away, would die. And I'm like, well, it's not going to happen. We have to recognize that the inner critic is trying to keep you safe. And so it'll point fingers at you and at the apps or at other people, but it definitely brings up a resonant energy that's not particularly positive. And so training our mindfulness on our parts of self, how we're showing up and the energy we're bringing to the apps or to dating. If you're showing up to that date, quite obviously, like, I'm trying to keep it together, but really, I just think this is going to be another one of these duds. It's probably mm-hmm. going to be a dud.
It's going to be a dud. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors.
Hello, Psychology of Relationships listeners. We're here to tell you about the Love Factually podcast.
On Love Factually, Paul Eastwick and Eli Finkel, who have been guests on our show and we love them, analyze rom-coms and romantic films using the science of close relationships.
In their day jobs, they're professors who teach classes about how people get into and maintain romantic relationships.
And one day they realized that more people go to the movies than go to class.
So they started the Love Factually podcast. And on each episode, they take one specific beloved movie and figure out what it gets right and wrong about attraction and close relationships.
It's such an entertaining way to revisit your favorite films and learn a thing or two about relationships at the same time.
Plus, they've had some amazing behavioral scientists as guests, like Lori Santos, Paul Bloom, Dan Pink, and Katie Milkman.
So check out the Love Factually podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So this might be controversial, but I'm not a big meal prepper. I really just like getting something fresh on the table. And when both my partner and I are working all day, sometimes we don't have time to go shopping and make an elaborate dish during weekdays, which is why I am so excited to try restaurant quality protein from Omaha Steaks. They have so many meats to choose from too, with different types of filet mignon, including butcher's cut, wagyu, grass-fed, burgers, chicken, and so much more. And the reason they are so good is that Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process. And to make it easy for delivery nationwide, they are flash frozen at their peak to give you that rich, juicy, and intense flavor that they are known for. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. If you're anything like me and you love finding books that completely pull you into another world, I have a recommendation for you. I recently read The Dare by the New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue, and I totally get why this book has become such a viral sensation. It's the dark romance prequel to the bestselling Losers series and follows a former prom queen and the guy she relentlessly bullied in high school. Years later, they end up at the same Halloween party where one game of drink or Dare changes everything. Could not put this book down. The Dare actually made headlines after it was temporarily banned by Amazon for being too sexy before they reinstated. And this new edition is especially fun because it includes a gorgeous gold foil cover and an all-new bonus novella called Ghosted that's never been published before. So if dark romance is your thing, or if you've been looking for the next book talk worthy read, I definitely recommend checking out The Dare by Harley LaRue. You can find it wherever books are sold in print or ebook. So this is the part I'm still struggling with. This surface level, right, is all the external, all the things that are going wrong in their lives. And we're saying it is, how do you reflect back on yourself and how you're showing up and bringing the energy to that? How can people like connect those dots a little more? Like, there any exercises outside of what you just said that they can dig a little deeper and get to that next level?
Well, one of the things I talk to people about is the narrative, right? What's the story that you're telling? I usually use this with respect to couples who are struggling in any one area. Like, it's really important. Our thoughts become feelings, right? And those feelings become more thoughts, and those thoughts become more feelings. And so we really do have to pay attention to the biochemical conversation that's going on with the brain and the body all of the time. And so if we're having those negative thoughts, and we have about 40 to 60,000 of them in the day, it's really tough to keep track of them all. But mindfulness can help us. And we begin to notice, like, oh, I'm actually telling a story in there, kind of in the quiet recesses of my mind. That's not a particularly good one. You know, maybe it's about the people that I'm dating, the pool of people that I'm dating. Maybe I'm telling a story of like how there are just no good dateable people out there. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm telling a story about the apps. The apps just are. And I know that you've had an experience thus far. But taking some of our power back with respect to dating and the dating apps might mean looking at the story that I'm telling, the thoughts and the feelings that I'm creating around it, because we are tuning that fork, as I've said before.
Sometimes when you're trying to take control of your narrative, it directly competes with your emotions. And for many, it's hard to control the emotions that come up. So something you talk about is the knee-jerk response, compassionate choice. How do we control, or at least deal with the emotions that come up when we're trying to take control of our narrative?
So we don't have control. You feel what you feel. And trying to control your emotions, it's like, okay, we just don't want to react. That's what mindfulness does. It gets us out of our knee-jerk response to our emotions so we can get space from them and we can name them. Naming is an age-old practice, Buddhist practice of saying, this is what I'm going through. And what that does is it gives us, I'm using my space from our experience, right? Where we can take that breath and we can kind of go, oh, these are the feelings I'm having, and we can have them. Just, I'm feeling frustrated. I'm angry. That's really good information. Underneath the anger, maybe some more sadness or hurt. And so we can process those feelings around that and not create more of a story that becomes more feelings, that becomes more of a story around that wheel. Right. And now we're getting that sense of we're actually gaining more control. I said we didn't have any control, or we shouldn't try to control them. We have your feelings. Let yourself have them, but not attach to them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely does. I think that, you know, it's like the first step is identifying them, because sometimes when we stuff them down, that's when they just show up. And
well, they go out sideways.
Exactly. That's like how it shows up on a date. All of a sudden you're coming off super angry and the date's like, why am I here? Right. And exactly. And you're wondering why no dates ever go past the third day. Right. So we always tell people, like, how would you describe dating to a friend? Mm-hmm. And then, like, see what words kind of come up for you. Let's say it is more negative based. Sometimes it's not as easy as just being like, okay, now make it positive. What are some ways that people can, like, reframe that narrative in a way that's serving them? Because I really believe wholeheartedly that just focusing on the negative aspects and bitching to your friends really doesn't do anything.
No, there's in narrative therapy, there is a practice of retelling the story and to begin to populate that story with gratitude. Right. With gratitude, find what are you grateful for in this process? What are you grateful for in yourself? What are you grateful for that you bring to the table? And I don't mean just sort of this laundry list of things like, you know, I'm a good person and no, it's feel into what it is you bring to the table. Like really feel it. Let there be a shift within you when you start practicing that gratitude and like notice how it begins to change the story about how you show up and the person that you are. And all of a sudden you're like, wait, no, this person gets to be with me. Coming to the table with that. And like I'm a pretty amazing person. I'm making room in my special life for you. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a cool place to come from, you know, and I'm having to constantly remind people when I see these wonderful and awesome, amazing people that are willing to do the work. My phone is the last one they want to call. It's usually the door they least want to walk through. And so when they come through the door, I'm like, look at all that you've done in your life and who you are. They pass over it in part because they're having this not so great experience in dating as an example. And so this is me re-reminding, and I'm not just, you know, putting a silk hat on a sow here. I'm saying you are an amazing human being in a lot of ways. And you've just sort of forgotten that in at least in this area.
Yeah, I think that's a really important thing to note. I'm glad you brought that up because I do think we forget. We almost have, you know, like amnesia of all the things that have gotten us to where we are. And especially when things aren't going well, we get fixated. And I remember when I was doing therapy, my therapist kind of had me map out the last like years of my life and what was going on in them and kind of disprove certain stories. Like at one point it was, I'm not a relationship person. And then
that's a narrative.
Yeah. And she was like, have you actually been trying to get into a relationship? No, you moved across the country. You've been focused on work. It doesn't mean anything about yourself. So like, are there other ways that you kind of help guide people to be like, it's not a reflection of who I am. It's more of just an instance that could be happening.
Well, look, again, this comes down to let's recognize that the apps, as an example, are there. They're there to help us. They're there to facilitate. When we start taking the information personally and beginning to form a story about that, and then maybe let that sort of infiltrate how you feel about yourself, we can't do that. We have to get space from that app and from that experience and say, okay, and then you can start asking questions like, what is the story I'm telling? And again, what part of me is showing up? You know, is there a part of me that doesn't want to be vulnerable? Is there a part of me that's scared? Is there a part of me that doesn't feel worthy of connection? What are my experiences from the past that are sort of influencing this? And so there's a reason why these parts are showing up when they're showing up. And it's information and perhaps something that needs to be looked at, something that needs to be healed, compassion that needs to be given to yourself. So we take all that apart, then perhaps we can kind of come at them a little bit differently.
And what would you say to the other cohort of daters who think they're the shit already, who think they're quite a catch, who are like, I am very accomplished. I can list all of my accomplishments. It's the other people who don't measure up to what I'm looking for. Something that we found that's very interesting because we have a Finding Your Person program and we do these group calls within the program. And a lot of the daters in this program have a very negative narrative when it comes to dating. But when we ask them to recall the positive times they've had dating, all of a sudden they're like, oh, I totally forgot about this awesome date I've had with someone or this great mini relationship I had. So that's one technique we found has helped is to recall the positive. What are some other ways how would you speak to this cohort of people who are just like, there's just nobody good enough for me?
Nobody good enough for me. Well, you know, that again, that comes to, I feel I would dig into, like, what are you protecting yourself from with this sort of precipice mm-hmm. that you've put yourself on? That too is a way to guard yourself against vulnerability. And I think it was Brené Brown who said, vulnerability is the cradle of all the things that we want to experience in the world, right? It's also one of the things we fear the most. I mean, you're asking me to give my heart over to someone who may or may not show up tomorrow, may die, may choose somebody else. This is a lot. And so this is just another technique. And so I wonder what would happen if we gave a little grace and a little space, perhaps, and some generous assumption to some of these people that you've opted out. I actually saw someone today in my practice, I have to say, that does just this thing. And I'm not outing her. She's totally down with understanding that that her checklist is too strict, and that she's protecting mm-hmm. herself through this strict checklist of, and ultimately there's no one.
Mm-hmm. 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 Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Here's a good example. I had an actor in my practice years ago, and she would say, well, you know, I can't date anyone in acting because they're all insane. And I can't date any civilians because they don't understand our business. And who's left? Who do we have?
Nobody.
I think maybe protecting yourself from the vulnerability of connection.
It's definitely a self-protection mm-hmm. mechanism, because, you know, you can't be rejected mm-hmm. if you don't ever put yourself mm-hmm. out there. If you're always the one mm-hmm. rejecting mm-hmm. first, right? One of the challenges that a lot of the daters that we talk to have is with modern dating. I mean, yes, like, we're not going to blame modern dating culture as a whole, but there mm-hmm. is some shit that comes with it, right? There's like feeling disposable mm-hmm. and people ghosting and relationships not getting off the ground. And sometimes this like little trauma that people experience, as it compounds over time, it can make them mm-hmm. almost reluctant to date again, because, you know, either they're afraid it's going to happen again, and maybe it's the opposite, that they almost become like their worst critic opposed mm-hmm. to taking any accountability. How would you speak to these people? Like, how can they reframe their narrative in a way that allows them to take accountability, but also not be like, I suck, I'm doing everything wrong, it's my fault?
I tend to go to parts. And is there an aspect of you that can kind of, in Buddhism, we have the middle ground, right? And it sounds like we were kind of hitting either post. Either I'm amazing and awesome and I can't date, or I'm just terrible mm-hmm. and I can't date. You're a human being. It's good to find the aspects of you that are awesome and amazing. But I think we start looking at that narrative, that story that they're telling, and it's like, as their therapist start pointing out, I mean, you're really going down a not so great road. Is this your inner critic that's come up? So again, I come back to, what part of you meets the dating world? It's so great when we can start doing a little roll call in there. And saying, oh, here's my inner protector. Here's my wounded child who doesn't feel like they're enough, you know, and feels desperate for connection. Mm. Here's my inner critic that thinks everyone's terrible, including me. And so what we ultimately find through this inner roll call is the wise enough self, the good enough self shows up.
The inner roll call. Mm-hmm. Well, that's...
I just made that up.
That is brilliant.
I just made that up in this moment. So
another first
here.
On our show.
Yes.
I love it. Inner roll call. So would you say, would it be a good practice for people to write down all of their inner voices? Yep. Mm-hmm. And when these kind of mm-hmm. thoughts come up, you can just name exactly who's saying that.
Who is that? So I imagine in mine, my inner roll call happens in a house that I don't own yet, in Kauai or maybe in Costa Rica. And there's this big table, and all my parts get a spot. And I start to get to know the different aspects of me that show up in my life. And so I kind of know who they are. And I'm like, oh, I know who that is. And mm-hmm. this is where that mindfulness piece kicks in. And so we get a sort of a sense and a flavor and an ear for the different thoughts and feelings that come up. Rather than being in a mood or any of that, we can say, oh, this is that part of me that tends to show up around this. Really great information. It's compartmentalization of the mind 101. In these different aspects of our brains, we have certain skill sets that other aspects of our brains don't have.
Mm-hmm. I love this parts of myself mm-hmm. because, you know, this happens all the time. Is you and I have wonderful friends that were like, mm-hmm. why mm-hmm. do they struggle with dating so much? You know, they're such like easy to talk to, lovely people. And mm-hmm. this also in some of our listeners that we've talked to in our program, like, you know, they seem like such great catches.
Yeah. Like, how could this person not be just mm-hmm. killing it?
Right. And I think a lot of it is like, how are you showing up dating? We're not physically on the dates with people. So we don't know. And I think it's been hard to like put a name to that. And I think sometimes I've thought of it more black and white of like, oh, this is like your friend self versus your date self. But I really like what you're saying is like you have multiple parts of you and some may be triggered in some aspects and not in others. And it's really important to take that inventory because it may not be all or nothing, but we may not be showing up in the way that like reflects our best self.
I can't tell you how important that is. I almost failed my licensing exam precisely for this reason. It's true. You think these parts of us are like your cell phone. And I'm the first person that said this, but you know, you have these apps. If you're in your Instagram app, as an example, can you send an email? No, you can't. Yeah. And so if you're in a particular part of yourself that you would like to be open, gregarious, and connective, but you're in a shut down protective part of yourself because of the vulnerability you're experiencing on this date or in this connection with this person, you're going to have quite the opposite experience, right? From connection. Information exists in some parts of your brain that doesn't in others. And again, I almost failed my licensing exam because I was so freaked out by the idea of this 400 question multiple choice test. And though I had done amazing work in my grad program, as I was taking the practice exams, I was failing miserably and I couldn't understand why until this parts thing came back online. I said, oh, it's the part of me that's showing up to the exam. I don't even have to study anymore. I just have to make sure that my parts are in line. And so we can, through practice, through mindful practice, begin to learn to shift parts like we shift a suit of clothes. Sometimes in the people that I help through the process of dating, they'll be fine in the beginning. Right. And their first 3, 4, 5, 6 dates. And then all of a sudden it's like, I like them a lot. And then all of a sudden they're like, and it's going off the rails. Right. What do I do now? And I'm like, okay, it's your parts. It's your parts. You're in this calm, cool, collected part. And now this little person in you that wants to know that they're loved, that they're safe, that they're mad. This part is now coming up and we have to take care of that part. And now all of a sudden they're micromanaging everything that they're doing and saying. And it's like, okay, let's just look at who's showing up.
How do you do that? It's probably really, it's probably not that easy, but how do you do that? Let's say you're on a date.
Yep.
You realize the part of you that is showing up is the easily irritated, just got off work, had a fight with your boss part. And you like to shift back to your playfulness part. How would you make that shift? What would be like the first step to do?
Well, noticing, right? And naming. And like, I have a full-on dialogue with these guys in here. Trust me. Luckily, I lived in New York City where that was okay. You know, I could go down the street.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Yeah, talking to myself. Yeah.
So that's your acting side coming through, right? You're using it.
And I'm like, I see you. I know what you're doing. I see you. I know what you're up to. And so I get separation because I've named it. Right? And so taking a break, run into the bathroom. I'm right back. I have to take this call. Whatever it might be, but it's really a negotiation. And you want to have done some preliminary work and know a little bit about this prior to this date. But you can learn to do that. I do it. I know that like when I'm going to step out on stage and I'm talking in front of a group of people, I have to stop. I have to push pause. And I say, who's here? What part of me is here? Oh, there's a part of me that oddly enough, I hate public speaking. I have an inner fraud that likes to come up and make myself small. And I have to say, hi. How are you? Love you so much. You're amazing at some other things, not this. I'm going to need you to step aside. And so this is actually, this negotiation is done in IFS, which is internal family systems theory, which says that there's an internal family of parts within all of us. And that negotiation is a really important aspect, one that we always, a lot of us skip. And our parts want to be recognized, oddly enough. They want to be seen. They want us to know. Because look, they're trying to get our attention for some reason, especially when we get into wounded children and all that kind of thing. And we can talk about that another time. But negotiating with that part, naming it and saying, I see you. I know what you're up to. And I'm going to need you to step aside because I want this other aspect of me to show up. And you'd be surprised, like the difference. When you just do that.
I think that's so big. And I think the separation, especially coming from like work to date, is women especially. I think sometimes we feel bad because it's like, oh, I can't let my like work side be the date side or whatever.
But depending on your job too.
Yeah, exactly. And I think though, like from what you're saying though, it's not that it's bad to show a different side. It's just tapping into another side that may be more, you know, in line with what you're doing at that exact moment. And it's not right or wrong.
I think it's an imperative. I think it's an absolute, can you imagine being able to move through your life that mindful and aware, like, oh, I'm stepping into this scenario. And it would be great if this aspect of myself were present. I can't tell you how many times I've been talking to my wife and she's turned to me and said, am I paying for this hour? Because, yeah, I'm good. I have a therapist.
Right. That's definitely happened to me before. I remember, like, with my old roommate, I was like, you are now talking to me like you talk to your fifth grade students, and I'm not appreciating it that much.
Don't get me started about my lawyers, the lawyers in my practice, right? You know, and like, oh, you're wondering why your partner feels like they can never like win an argument or get their feelings hurt.
Oh, God, yeah.
Because counselor, you keep showing up and you're litigator.
Well, I guess we've been talking about dating, but let's shift over to relationships and couples. Is that something you would recommend for couples to do, is to call each other out on which part that's coming out?
Listen, my protector part, my wife calls him Mitch. Okay.
Literal name.
Literally, yeah. He'd literally name it. If you could do it and have fun with it. Like, we've gotten to a point where it's fun. And it's actually really helpful for me because she'll say, it's feeling a little Mitchy in the neighborhood today. How are you doing, sweetie? And she'll rub my back. And I'll be like, I am fine. Leave me alone, woman. And I'm like, it's a call to mindfulness, right? Because she's there and she's noticing. And so I'll say that. And and she'll say that. And I'll be like, she's right. I can feel it. Like, that part of me was really good at, you know, dealing with bar fights in the seedy joints I worked at in New York. Not a great partner, oddly enough. Not a great dad. And so, you know, I want to make sure I'm aware of where that part of me is, that part that it was, you know, charged with protecting me throughout the rough times in my life. It's good to make sure in my relationship, if we're having a back and forth and we're not coming to terms on any one thing, maybe we're having a little argument. I don't want that guy showing up. I'll hear him whispering in my ear. He'll be like, now you get to say this. And I'm like, I'm not saying that. No, but you heard what she said. You get to say this now. And I'm like, I'm not saying it because I know where it goes.
So is this a lifelong practice then, like from, you know, all stages of relationships and dating?
Yeah, I mean, you start moving through your life where you are in a more mindful and aware way. You get to be really present for your work, for your family, extended and otherwise, for new possible partners in your life. And you get to be really present for yourself. You really get to know yourself in an extraordinary way.
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners. If your ideal romance has morally gray characters, impossible love stories, and enough emotional damage to keep you thinking about it for days, you need to read The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole. This is the second book in the Gods and Monsters series, and I feel like it takes everything that I loved about the first one and turns it up another level. At the center of the story are Diana, an ancient shapeshifter who's fully embracing her monstrous side after devastating betrayal, and Sam Keel, the immortal god king who still believes there's something worth saving in her. This book had me on the edge of my seat the entire read. What I love most is that the story never really lets you decide who's the hero and who's the villain, and the lines get blurrier with every chapter. I could not put it down, as I just love the banter throughout the book. And if you're a collector, the deluxe special edition is honestly stunning. With stenciled edges, full color character art and papers, a designed hardcover case, and an exclusive bonus scene. Pick up The Throne of Broken Gods by Amber V. Nicole wherever books are sold.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes, because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction.
If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/POR show for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/POR show.
I'm so curious about how this can be put into practice. So I'm going to ask you, Julie, what are some of the parts that you have within you that you've seen come out?
I mean, I definitely think I have multiple parts.
Like, you
I
definitely have, do.
Like a cheesy sentimental side that maybe my partner sees more than work colleagues, for instance. Maybe more of, you know, sarcastic side that could come out on this podcast, or maybe more of a type A personality that comes out when I'm getting work done. Playful side. I think I have many different sides. And sometimes I've actually had this thought before that am I not being my true self with someone because I might show one side with certain people over others. And then I've come to the realization that that's actually not true. I just do have multiple sides to my personality. And it's not that one is, you know, one person knows me better than the other. It's just that different people kind of bring out different sides of me in different situations too.
Yep. Yeah, different people, different situations will trigger different aspects of self. And it becomes a real curiosity for me as to why.
So would you say that you're never not yourself then?
I would say you're never not some aspect of self.
Oh, that's interesting.
You may not like the aspect that comes up. You may not love it. And, you know, that's your work.
What about like if you are actually feeling inauthentic though? You know, like sometimes you can be like, oh my God, did I just say
I feel
this?
Fake.
Did that word just come out of my mind?
Why are you saying that? There's some part of you that's up that is feeling probably insecure. Needing or wanting something. And I'm going to go right to a wounded younger child part.
That's funny because I just rewatched the TV show Insecure, and she always says really awkward things that aren't her. And it's always in moments that she feels insecure, basically. I guess, UA, I'll turn it to you. But what about you? What are different parts that you could identify with?
I think because I've been working from home so much, many parts have shown up in my relationship with my partner, and he's starting to see so many different layers. I am an only child. I thought for a long time I was able to hide that pretty well. But the only child me does come up. I call her Susie. Yeah. She's just like so fucking annoying. But she's the girl that needs attention. She's the girl that thinks the world revolves around her. She is just the center of the universe. And I hear her. And then I have this other side of me, which is Susie dressed up in big girl clothing. So like the imposter syndrome side of me, where I feel like I'm inauthentic in the way I speak to adults and try to bring credibility to myself. It just feels like I am reading off someone else's resume. And the third aspect or the third part of myself I see quite a bit is the nurturing, compassionate, like older woman who just wants to solve people's issues. So the three are conflicting, and it's really interesting when one comes up, one leads, and then the other two kind of like want to battle it out to be in the forefront.
I wonder what sides of you to come out when you lock horns with your partner, when the rubber hits the road and things are a little bit tough and you're having difficult communications. Because it's my theory, and I outline this in the book, that we don't actually have communication problems. That people will call me and they'll say, we have communication problems. And I say, you don't. And they get frustrated. I'm like, no, I was there. We do. And I'll say, no, you communicated that you have commanded the English language. You said that just fine. I understood everything. What you have is a parts problem. And so I'll draw a Venn diagram, two circles intersecting. And I'll say, okay, here's you and here's your partner. And all the parts are in here, the X's and the O's. And we have this little almond. It's the conversation, whatever it is. It's really important who shows up in there. Because if you show up in a part of yourself that's like your inner critic or your warrior weapons hot self, it's like trying to send an email from your Instagram. You don't have the skills to connect. So we can use all the I statements we want. What I think I heard you say through the wrong part turns to what I friggin' heard you say really quickly.
So true.
You know what makes dating so challenging? This was kind of just a light bulb moment for me, is that we don't know the other person's parts at all. We're only seeing the snapshot of them on 1 hour. Like you were saying, Lara, that your wife can call you on a different part. If you meet someone for a drink for 1 hour, you can't call them on a different part. That's who you think they are as an entire human being.
Is it what I do? I stand back and kind of let people reveal themselves. and notice like, oh, okay, so this is what's happening for them in this moment. Like you can see if they're, you know, nervous or they're saying things that are kind of out of left field or, you know, they're trying to be cool. It's like, I'm going to be sure that when I meet you on this first date or second date, I'm probably meeting your agent, but not the real you.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's mindfulness. I think that the fact that you are mindful mm-hmm. allows you to make that connection where a lot of people are at the surface mm-hmm. level, mm-hmm. still blaming the app, still blaming the other people. Doing all the things that aren't themselves mm-hmm. or understanding how people operate. And in that case, it would just walk away being like, well, that was a dud. That person sucked. Opposed to having the mindfulness that you were just saying. I think that can actually help you on dating too, because it can say like, maybe this person, like what is the good that I could see in this person, even if yeah. it wasn't 100% home run, that mm-hmm. could make it that the next date is totally different than this one was.
Yeah, well, if I'm seeing that date through my inner critic, I'm kind of like, oh God, that was terrible. But if I stand back and I get into my wise self, I can say, you know, it was a first date. And, you know, maybe I can give them another chance because, look, we all show up to these in the various ways that we do. And it wasn't their best go. Mm-hmm. You know, if it was a total shot, then move on. But yeah, this way of looking at the parts of us that show up, not only does that give us compassion for ourselves, perhaps, but perhaps compassion for the other person.
If we have all these different parts that show up mm-hmm. at different times, what is the through line that defines who we are so that we are not like multiple personalities, but it is mm-hmm. still us, just different parts of us?
So you think about there's a seat of consciousness that sits here within all of us, right? And here's the fun part. The wise self, the soul, if you will, does not care who shows up because it's all grist for the mill, right? Like you're going to get the lesson or a lesson no matter who shows up. But when we stand back in that witnessing wise self and we say, okay, I see that this part of me wants to come up because I'm nervous about this date or this is the third date. We've checked a lot of really great boxes and I don't want it to screw up, right? I just want this to go well. So this other part of me shows up. We start naming and doing that in our roll call. Again, what happens is the wise self takes over. That part of us that is wildly compassionate, empathetic, understanding for other people and oneself, right? And that's important not to leave yourself out of the compassion.
There has been so much about this conversation that has blown my mind, which is in the best way possible. And I think like to go into some of our takeaways, I think I started off this conversation having the feeling that I still do that like it's the easy way out is to blame the external or to blame other people. And the hard work is looking at yourself. But I think what I've learned from this too is that, yes, it's work. It's definitely work to look at yourself and to take accountability. But it also can be great fun if we start to look at it as what side of myself is coming out right now? What part am I showing? What is this bringing up for me? It's almost like this game of Clue in a mystery that we're solving of what is the curiosity that I can get. I can use every opportunity to get to know myself better because that is the only variable that matters at the end of the day. If you are, you know, now in a relationship, maybe you're not using dating apps anymore, mm-hmm. but there'll be something else that you can blame. Like there's never going to be a shortage of things that you can blame. But at the end of the day, you are the only person that you have control of is yourself. And the only things that really can shift is how you're showing up to certain circumstances. So using all the tools and the methods that you gave today, I think is probably the number one thing people can do. We see that people spend all this time updating their profile and it's almost like it's not your profile. It is you in the nicest way mm-hmm. possible.
Yeah. And doesn't that give you so much more power and so much more standing, right? It feels so solid. Often we feel like when we stop blaming those things that we're giving up.
Right.
And really what you're doing is you're taking the higher ground. You're taking that road less traveled.
I think we need to also ask ourselves, like, what are we getting mm-hmm. out of blaming certain aspects? Because I think sometimes misery just likes company and people like to bitch. But if we actually say, what am I getting out of looking deeper at myself? And I mean, that the world, like, it's almost like endless when you start to unravel that. I feel like we all had revelations even on this interview. So I think hopefully our listeners are digging deeper into the different questions that you brought up at the very start, mm-hmm. or even just like the different parts that we kind of named. I'm sure people can name a zillion parts within themselves.
Yeah, I love that. I'm just still blown away by our little revelation that maybe we are always our most authentic self. It's just that there are some parts of us that we like better than others. I think there's been so much pressure from society to just be yourself.
Yeah.
Just be your authentic self. All those Instagram memes, like, just be authentic. Many people feel a little bit lost in what that means. Who am I? Know that you are always being yourself. And now you have a choice in choosing which part of yourself you want to be more of. I love this idea that we have this inner roll call. We have these different parts. And one takeaway for me and for our listeners is that I think we can start observing that even more and start naming those parts. So you know how you feel when you are in the Susie part for me or in this other part, like Shirley. Julie, I'm going to call your cheesy side. I'm going to call her Shirley because I just love that name so much.
Still,
you just love calling.
It's an inside joke.
I was just thinking about the old airplane movie when you said that. Never call me Shirley.
Throw back to season one.
I was having my own internal joke.
I love it. I love it. We'd a third on our podcast. Three people with three different internal jokes. It happens simultaneously. But what is it that we feel when we're in that part? So when we observe those feelings, we can choose which part we want to bring out more. I think that is the most empowering part of all of this, is that we can choose what we want to show more of.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think just knowing that we're multidimensional and the people we date are multidimensional too. I know, like, on a, like, a subconscious level, we all know that, but I don't think we always bring that out when we're dating. And it kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. And we were almost even victim of this too, that we're like, there's kind of two ends of the spectrum, the people that blame themselves or the people that blame others. Yeah. And maybe you can be both. Maybe there's certain situations that you do go to the external, and sometimes you go to the internal and are a little too much of your own critic. And same for the people on the dates. I love this of, like, can we take a step back and just recognize that this person is showing up on a date? Dates are inherently uncomfortable sometimes. Can we give this person the benefit of the doubt? In modern dating, people just do not give enough benefit of the doubt. And of course, there's a difference of giving too much that you get taken advantage of. But there's also, like, not giving someone a shot and giving them a chance to develop something.
And also for our listeners, this is great date talk. I mean, forget about, like, where did you grow up? How many siblings you got? How about, like, show me your inner roll call? Who lives in you? And know that the second date may bring out something different, because maybe you bring out a different part of you that would cause them to bring out a different part of themselves too. So I love this, because there's something very actionable here.
Mm-hmm. I think so often we jump to the negative when someone says, maybe it is you, right? Like, there's something wrong with you. That's where our minds go. But I think if we can reframe it to what we're saying today, maybe it is you, but what side of you? And let's figure out how the sides of you that really are make you freaking awesome can come out more. That's when, like, dating falls into place.
It sure does.
This has been such an interesting conversation. We're so glad that we had you join us. Can you tell everyone where they can find your book?
Right. Yeah. So it's The Practice of Love by Lair Torrent. And I say that because there's a couple other things named The Practice of Love. So if you look it up on the internet, it may take you to the wrong place. But it's on barnesandnoble.com. It's on Amazon. And it's also at Roman and Littlefield, which is my publisher.
Awesome. And we will also link it in the show notes.
Thanks so much. It's been such a great time having you, or being here with you guys. Thanks
so
much.
Thank you. And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.